I can get this. Okay, it is Tuesday, November 27th, 2007. This is Leanne Diakoff, and I am interviewing Alvin Lehman Martin, who was born June 23rd, 1924, and served in World War II as a technical sergeant in the Army Air Forces, serving in the European Theater. We are back at St. Matthew's United Methodist Church here in Louisville, Kentucky, and this is the second part of an interview that we began 2 weeks ago on November 15th, and we are picking up a little bit where we left off last time. So, Mr. Martin, you were telling me that in, I believe it was around August of 1944, you were in Italy, and then you were assigned to a general in France and had gone to do some flights out of France to assist that general as the army pushed east through Europe. We had talked a little bit about some of your flights out of France, and as you went east, some flights out of Heidelberg. Then we had kind of come to a point where you were talking about a flight you had made to England to deliver some very important persons back to their home country, and the Queen was there on the tarmac at the airport. Could you just kind of back up and tell me a little bit more about how that came about?
I didn't usually get the briefing that the officers, flight officers, got, the pilot and co-pilot, so I didn't know exactly where we were going, but we went to Stuttgart and picked up two men, and I later found out their names. Ambassador Winans, I heard, our ambassador to England, his son, and then I think it was Queen Elizabeth's nephew. They had been prisoners of war of the Germans, and they were released, and we were designated to fly them back to England and to their home country, and so we did, and I think it was in the morning, around 10 to 11 o'clock in the morning, and I forget the exact date, but we landed at Heathrow Airport in London, and they didn't have us taxi clear up to where the ramp was that held the people. We had to park a little ways away, and then they took our two men over in cars, and I found out and I saw that the Queen Mother was there in that group, and I wanted to go over and and meet her or anyone else I could, but my pilot said, no, we're going back to France. So that was kind of disappointing, but that was, I wish I had time to make more notes about it and remember every detail that I could, but I remember my pilot on the way into England asked me to get a hold of the RAF, the Royal Air Force, and provide us an escort since we had some VIPs aboard. Well, I told my pilot, I said, sir, I've never been taught English radio procedure, and I don't know how to get a hold of them. And he was really, real disappointed with me. So I tried through my transmitter receiver to get a hold of any RAF base or English people and tried to tell them who I was, and I never could get anybody to answer me. If I'd have got them on a receiver, I could have honed my transmitter into their frequency and talk to them, but I never could get anybody. So my pilot was real disappointed with me. But I didn't know their procedures. They weren't like the radio procedure that I'd studied. But that was one nice trip we made. And you mentioned a trip to England. This was, I don't remember if it was before that or after, but we went to Manchester, England, to get our plane worked on. It had a out-of-date electrical system, and we went up there, and we were there about a week while they were finished. So we got to go to London, and I went, not through, but I saw Westminster Abbey and Big Ben and Piccadilly, and we stayed in the Old Bailey hotel in the Knightsbridge section of London. And oh, this had to be in April, because we were there two nights or three nights, I forget. And the first night we were there, one of the German V-2s came over. And I heard the sirens going off and nobody was moving. I said, isn't that the air raid sirens? They said, yes. I said, aren't we going to the basement or down into the, where the Underground Railroad is? He says, no, it don't do any good. That V-2 penetrates way deep and then it goes off. So you just have to hope it's not in your neighborhood. So that thing hit, I don't know how many blocks away, but it shook that building, Old Bailey Hotel. It shook it something awful. And I never was so frightened, I guess. But anyway, it didn't hit us, didn't hurt us.
Did you see a lot of destruction in England from
London,
the airways?
Your heart had to go out to those English people. They just had rubble on top of rubble where the Germans had bombed, and it was pathetic. But they had the right attitude, and they stayed in there and toughed it out, and appreciated them. And after our trip, taking the two prisoners of war, I think the next trip we made was, again, we flew to Stuttgart, and I didn't know who we were picking up. But here came a man out that was dressed in civilian clothes. He had a hat and a long overcoat, and with the coat turned up and his hat brimmed down, and I couldn't recognize him. But for a civilian to get an army plane, I knew it meant something. So we found out, we flew him to Munich, and I don't know what his business was, but it was Heinrich von Papen, the Reich's Chancellor just before Hitler in the early 30s. And I wish I could have known and gotten his autograph and got some more information, because that is a... But anyway, we took him to Munich and then came back. And I think I mentioned some of the other trips we made while we were still in France.
How was that getting into Munich with someone like von Papen on board? Was this during the war, or was this after?
This was after, I think it was right after VE Day, mm-hmm. not long after it. VE Day, May the 8th. And I'm not clear on some of my dates through that period of time, because, boy, we went a lot of places and did a lot of things. But back before this time, I guess my most important trip that I ever took, and the one I'm most proud of, is on May the 7th, I think we were at Vittel, France. We picked up a general, a four-star general, and I later found out his name was General de Latry de Tassigne, and he was a French four-star general. And we flew him to Berlin on May the 7th and landed at Tempelhof Airport. And he was to sign the peace treaty for France. And that was quite an experience. And they kind of discouraged us from using cameras. And I had one, but I got one picture out of the window of our plane. But I didn't get any pictures of the personnel that I ran into. But we got there at about 10:30 on May the 7th in the morning. And they drove us through Berlin, the Russians did. And the Russians had women, traffic guards or traffic police. They were at every corner. And like England, like London, Berlin was just rubble. I was surprised that they even had enough room cleared in the streets that you could get through. But they took us to East Berlin. And I don't know what street or what section, but they were going to they billeted us over there. And then I don't know where they took the officers to. But that afternoon, we met in front of the, I don't know which government building it was. It was pretty close to there. But that's where I saw most all of the big shots, the top military from each country. I know our general, the head of our Air Force, whole Air Force, General Spatz, he was there. I can't think of his first name. Seems like Albert, but I'm not sure. And then the head of England's Air Force, Air Marshal Tedder, he was there. And General Tassinia that we flew up was there. And I'm trying to think. I think it was the top commanders of the Russian 1st and 2nd White Russian Armies. That was Konev and Rosakovsky, I think it was. They were the top Russian generals. And while standing on the sidewalk of the building out there, why, all of these people were talking. I think there was one other member, American flight crew member, besides myself there. And I don't know whose plane he came off of. Must have been General Spatz. But anyway, we're all standing there conversing, and I hear footsteps behind me. And pretty soon they got more prominent, more louder, and I looked around, and who's about to almost walk into me but General von Keitel. He was about second or third under Hitler. And, I got out of the way real quick. And there was a Russian soldier behind him with a submachine gun in his hand. He was escorting these. It was General Keitel and a German admiral named Friedelberg, I think was the name. They were the two that were signing for the treaty for Germany. And I'd have liked to gotten some autographs around there. So I'm sorry.
So did von Keitel sign it at gunpoint?
He was spick and span. Had that gray uniform on. He looked really sharp. And all those German officers' uniforms were really sharp. And his boots, the knee boots, are all shined. And he was a epitome of a real soldier. I'd like to been able to talk with somebody like that. Of course, I'd have had an interpreter. Mm-hmm. But I'm just a 20-year-old then. I'm not in a... But anyway, that night, they took us back to our billets, and which weren't very far away. And they were going to have a meeting that night, but I didn't know if we were invited, the enlisted men. The officers would probably all go. But I knew what it was going to be, just a big drinking party with them Russians and their vodka, and I didn't want none of that. But anyway, me and one other fellow that was billeted with me, we heard some singing down the street. And what little German we'd picked up, I could tell it wasn't German, the singing. So we started walking down there, and we came up to a white picket fence around a house. And right over in the yard, it was kind of a small yard, was a circle of soldiers. And they were all singing. And we found out later they were Russian. But we walked up to the picket fence and was listening to them. And when they noticed who we were, or noticed we were watching them, boy, they encircled us right quick. And I got frightened. I didn't know what to... I tried to say American in every language I could think of. Finally, we got them to know that we were Americans. And they got real cordial. They invited us in and offered us some cold cuts, fish and cheeses, and that is real nice. And when our glances met, all we could do was just smile. We couldn't say a word to each other. And I had my .45 automatic pistol. I showed him my gun, this leader of their group, and then he showed me his Russian pistol and all, and we just smile and just keep going. And so we finally got up and excused ourselves and went back to the billet. But the next day when the peace treaty was signed, they didn't take us over again, the enlisted men. So I didn't get to be in the hall or where they signed it or not, but I would have loved to have been. So that was on the 8th, and then I think this was up toward noon when the whole procedure went on. And then we took General Tassigny back to France in the early afternoon. It was about a three-hour flight, something like that, back to France. And then we moved from, shortly after that, we moved from Vittel, France, into Heidelberg, Germany. And I think I mentioned it's the big Heidelberg universities where our headquarters were. And I don't remember.
You had mentioned that briefly, and that you had that there were other people there. I guess other famous people who were in the military were also in
yes.
Heidelberg.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
The group that I was assigned to was called the 6th Army Group. And it was headquarters for the French 1st Army and also the American 7th Army. And General Jacob L. Devers, 4-star general, was commanding general. And his chief of staff was Major General David G. Barr, B-A-R-R. And he was the officer that we flew for, his chief of staff. We had a C-53 cargo plane, a passenger-type plane. And he was real good to us. And we flew. I think I told some things that happened after that earlier that I forget which ones it was. But we flew different places to get things for the officers' club or officers' mess. And I think it was about the 8th or 9th. Or maybe somewhere in that vicinity of August, that we were told we could go on, we're going home. And I was offered a job that I wished I had taken 1,000 times. I was offered to crew the radio, to be the radio man on General Lucius Clay's plane that was going to be the governor, military governor of Germany. And I'd been gone for a couple of years, and I wanted to go home. I didn't ask them if they'd give me a furlough, and then I come, but I could have retired early and had a real job. But anyway, we started home about the 9th. General Barr came out and bid us goodbye, and the major general we flew for, and told us if he could ever help us, well, I let him know. And then we took off from, I guess, Heidelberg. Yeah. And we flew to Paris, and we landed. And then we flew from Paris. We went to Valley, Wales, north of, you know, England a little bit. And the next day from there, we flew to Iceland. And that was quite an experience. This is August, and it never got dark up there. You never knew when daylight and dark was supposed to be. And we were near Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland, but we never got to go to town see them. And we were weathered in, what they call it, for 10 days. We couldn't go to Greenland from there because of the weather. It was so unstable. But anyway, finally, well, before we left there, VJ Day occurred. And there was some celebration on the poster. And we didn't just get with them very much in their celebrations because we were anxious to get on out of there and get home. Mm-hmm. But then I guess with that weather like it was, that foggy, damp weather, I caught cold in Iceland. And as we left Iceland to go to Greenland, I forget what height we were flying. It seemed around 10,000 feet. But when he started to let down to go into Greenland, if you've ever flown with a cold, you know your ears stop up and they can really get painful. Mm-hmm. I had to go forward and ask that pilot to slow his descent because it was hurting. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. And he was kind enough to do it. He slowed it down, the descent. And to look out those windows and see Greenland with all that ice and snow and everything, that was an experience. I wish I had the opportunity to see some of the places I've been. And then from Greenland, we were just there one night, I think. We flew to Goose Bay, Labrador. And I don't remember anything there because we were getting closer to home and getting more anxious to see home. And then from Goose Bay, we flew into Bradley Field, Connecticut. And I forget what city that's closest to, that Bradley Field. But I know there was 25 or 30 of us on that plane, something like that. And every one of us, boy, when that door opened at Bradley Field, Connecticut, we were out kissing old Mother Earth. It was so good to see America. Oh, my.
And how long had you been gone? How long had it been since you had taken off from Florida?
March of 15th and 44.
Yeah.
And this was about a year and a half, something like that. A little better than a year and a half. I saw some beautiful country, different parts of the world, of South America and Africa and Italy, and there's a lot of beautiful country over there, and there's some that's not very beautiful. That's down in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But Germany is the prettiest country I was in. That's really a beautiful country. But from Bradley Field, Connecticut, they put us on trains for... My train was headed for Indianapolis, Indiana, we went through Boston, New York, and we didn't get off. We just looked at the site as we went through. Part of it was by night, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then to Indianapolis, and then changed trains and went on into, I don't know if I debarked from a train in Louisville or if it went on south, I can't remember. I seemed like I went on a bus from Louisville to Glasgow, my hometown.
Did your family know you were coming? Had you sent word?
Yes, I forget where I was when I notified them. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know the exact day and time. And I had to catch a ride home with a neighbor from Glasgow. And that was quite a reunion. I was so glad to see my...
So you took a bus into Glasgow and then just ran into a neighbor?
Yes. Uh-huh. I don't remember just how it was, but that neighbor was, so nice. And to see dear old Glasgow, that's my beloved hometown. I love it. And they gave me a 45-day furlough, and I stayed there and visited and just had a good time and eat some good of mother's cooking.
Well, let's back up to your homecoming. Your neighbor took you home, driving up the drive or down the road. Who saw you first?
You know, I can't remember. I don't remember if I'm one that got out and walked on up to the door or if they were looking for me. That's my two sisters who are younger than I. I'm pretty sure they're the first ones that met me. And then mother and dad. My youngest brother may have been there too, but all my older brothers were gone, living in different places.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a wonderful moment to see my home,
mm-hmm.
as I had a wonderful family, dad and mother and sisters, all of them, brothers. And I can't remember, this person I rode home with was a lady that I used to ride to high school with when I was going to high school in 38 and 39. But I don't know whether I just bumped into her accidentally when I got into Glasgow or whether I knew where she worked. She'd always worked at just one store. And I don't remember how I got in touch, but she's the one that took me home. And from home, after the 45 days, I went to Houston, Texas, to Ellington Field. And I don't remember exactly how long, but it was November the 3rd in 45, they handed me my discharge. and about $100 to for a bus fare to get home. And I had two of my five brothers besides myself that were, one was in the infantry in the Pacific, and then my brother, my older brother, was in the Navy Seabees, and he went into Iwo Jima, D+3. He went in there when it was still real hot. But that ended my career in the service, and when I think back over it, there's a lot of places I'd like to see, and a lot of wonderful experiences.
Do you remember where you were when you heard that the war was over? The war in Europe.
Yeah, I was in Vittel, France, mm-hmm. That little resort town. It's this headquarters outfit that I was assigned to. I can't remember the exact dates again, but it was in Vittel and then in a few days or a week or two or three, something like that, we moved into Germany. my engineer and I, there was two of us enlisted men on the plane that we flew the general with, two enlisted men and then two officers, pilot and co-pilot. We were billeted right close to that big Heidelberg University. It was interesting to see, and I think I mentioned earlier some of the people in that were in that headquarters outfit, some of them from India and some from England, and a couple of three prominent. I think I mentioned the Vanderbilt man. He was a young fellow, but from a pretty prominent family. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad for all the people I met and surprised at the reception we got in Germany when we went in. I thought we weren't allowed to speak with them even when we first went in there. But that didn't stop us. Mm-hmm. And they treated us, or me at least, and a friend, they treated me real nice. Gave me a birthday party for my 20th birthday. And I'm still in contact with that family that owned that building there. My two nieces, my oldest sister's daughters, one of them's husband was in the Air Force after the war here, and he was stationed over there. And 2 years ago, they went and met this family that I knew. Mm-hmm. And they treated my nieces real, real good, took them to lunch and coffee and tea and everything. It was really nice.
I was just going to ask something, and I completely forgot what it was. Oh, when did you reunite, or when did you find out what had happened to your original group that you had flown with Italy? They had become POWs,
yes.
Right?
I didn't start looking them up right away. In fact, it was 74. The wife and I were on a vacation, and we went to Arizona, and two of the people that was on my crew lived out that way, three of people out there. So I just said, man, I'm going to see if I can find them. And sure enough, I did. I found them, and I said, how would you guys like a reunion? Hey, that'd be great. This was in 74. And I was in 75 before I found the rest of them. I had known what cities they were close to or lived near or in, mm-hmm. while I was in combat with them. And so I just called long distance information and asked for this person, and they'd give me their telephone number. That's a good way to locate people. And one had moved from Montana to California, and I was a long time finding him. And someone helped me find him. And when I notified them all that July the 4th and 5th, just 4 days from an anniversary that they were shot down, they thought it was a great idea. And right at the last, I thought my co-pilot from Philadelphia wasn't going to get to make it. But he did, and there was 8 of the 10 of us made it. And we made the WAVE television, we made Lexington and Louisville paper, Bowling Green paper, and the Glasgow paper, and I got a picture of our crew that was in the paper of when we were in Nebraska training back earlier. But now, out of the 10 of us, there's only 3 of us still living, the 2 pilots and myself. And I talked to my pilot in New York just since I talked to you last. Mm-hmm. And he's doing just fine. He was a real good B-24 pilot. We trusted him explicitly. And he's about 86 or 87 now, something like that, 2 or 3 years older than we were. I was the youngest guy on the crew when I went.
Well, before 74, I guess, did you know that they had made it back?
Well, I found out they were all, I didn't know where in Germany or Poland or France or wherever they were, where they were prisoners at, but I knew they'd all got out in parachutes. So that meant unless they got killed or by the Germans or had an accident or something, I knew they'd be living. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about how they got back, when they come back, and when they were released. And then I didn't start just shortly after I was discharged and started working public work. Mm-hmm. I didn't start getting in touch with them for a long time until I went on this vacation in 74 and I started trying to find them.
Did they ever forgive you for not making that last flight with them?
I've kind of left them room where they could kid me. I got one of them, he calls me Sick Call Al. I said, well, I know when to stay with my friends and when to leave. But that's what kept me from being a prisoner with them, is going to the hospital that morning, very morning. Mm-hmm. And but they never do mention that except in a kidding way. And they're the great. We used to have some good times together. And it's wonderful the bonding that takes place when you're in that kind of a environment where you're about to die sometimes. When you got friends around, boy, that means an awful lot.
Did you ever make that kind of bond with your crew when you were flying for the general out of France?
Not quite as much, you know, because we were all doing different type of work, and we weren't about to maybe get killed unless we was in an accident or something. Mm-hmm. And I never got as close to them, but our pilot, this one that got disappointed when I didn't know my radio procedure, his whole crew didn't like him too well. he was a little on the conceited side. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, we got along with him. We had to. And I think all of that crew is gone now. The last one to die was the co-pilot, and he lived in Pittsburgh. And his wife called me just 2 or 3 months ago that he just passed away. Mm-hmm. And I can't find the pilot. He used to be in Cleveland, but I heard he moved to Florida, and I can't find him. But some wonderful experiences. I didn't know what I was getting into when I volunteered to come, but I knew, like all the other guys in the country, we didn't like it when that people bombed our naval base over there. And
well, what did your, when you think back on your service, how did that, what kind of life lessons did you take from that you used after the service?
I don't know how to explain it exactly. I kind of grew up in a hurry like a lot of other young men, because you didn't just come up in civilian life and not face the things that we faced. And you kind of grew up in a hurry where you're in a position you're going to might die. And of course, I had a good foundation in life from my mother and father. They're best Christians. and they taught us the right way and lived it before us. And so I had a good foundation, but it is good to meet people like that. I met all different nationalities in our Army, you know, the Polish, the Italians, and people, all Americans, but, you know, different nationalities. And that was a good experience to meet all the people that I've met. I love to meet people because I learn from people. They have had other experiences in life that I've had, and I learn from them. And I try to be, well, I wish I could speak publicly, but I can't do it. I'm not an extemporaneous speaker, but I've had a lot of experiences in my life, and I'd like to, my heart goes out to the young people today. They're just so neglected and left. I'd like to help young people. And I found out here a year ago that our area here in Louisville is the highest teenage suicide rate in the country. That just so disheartening. I was president of the 500 Boy Little League in Fern Creek in 72, 3, and 4, I think it was. Anyway, that is a joy to work with little young people and try to lead them in the right way. And I've had some of the boys step out in front of all the other coaches and say, I want to be on Mr. Martin's team. that'll humble you. So I love people. I love young people especially. I've got three grandchildren. I got six in all, six grandchildren, and three I don't get to see. And they're grown adults now. And it's kind of disheartening. They don't live in the area. One of my grandchildren that I had never seen since he was 2 years old, and he's 32 now, came in from California, and I got to see him here a couple of weeks ago, and we had a wonderful reunion. I can't get him to move back to Kentucky.
Well, it was nice that he visited.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I think I'll end our interview here. Do you have anything else to add?
I don't believe so. I probably will remember some things after I leave, but they'll be back earlier.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us.